This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
That's right. Here on this Friday, the day before Grapefruit League play begins for the Cardinals in Florida, we are also getting ready for City SC. The soccer season starts tomorrow here in St. Louis at Energizer Park in the afternoon. Tonight, the Billikens have a big game. They go up against VCU trying to rebound from the loss at Rhode Island. But let's talk a little Cardinals to start things off here. Mike Claiborne and Matt Pauly are in Florida right now.
Now, a St. Louis Cardinals spring training report, sponsored by St. Louis Composting. Composting, growing gardens and making memories. And by Happy Roof, we always create happy endings on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Yeah, guys, I know we've been talking about it all week, and Matt Pauly, who's been on the Gas House Gang multiple times this week, every day, in fact, we're just talking about getting ready. You know, they've been practicing, they've been doing workouts, they're on the field, and now it's time for real, actual baseball to happen.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, and we'll see Matthew Liberatore out there throwing a couple innings. We've watched a fair amount of live BP sessions where you're facing off against your own team, so we've hit the point where it feels good to be able to see something where two teams are going up against each other. Just the next step here in spring training.
Yeah, Klabes, I mean, this is better, right? I mean, it's better to actually see some baseball and see some competition, yeah, even though it doesn't...
I agree.
We've seen enough catch.
Yes.
There he is. Klabes, we're having a little bit of difficulty with the feed there. But yeah, this feels right. You know, we're going to listen to baseball on the radio tomorrow. And even though the games don't count... You know, the Cardinals can lose every game in, you know, spring training. It doesn't really matter. But the fact you're going to hear baseball on the radio, it's the best. It's just the best feeling to have it there.
Yeah, it's really good. And I'm excited. I got to see John Rooney for a little bit yesterday. And Ricky's been around all throughout spring. And just have those guys back on the radio along with Klabes. And then there are things that matter. Like, I don't think the score matters so much. In the final 2 weeks, there are some individual things that matter. Just watching some of these new players and how they're coming along. Watching the hitters as well. This is a team that I'm not quite sure how they're going to score runs this year. So watching to see if we're going to start to get an idea on if some of these hitters are ready to take a step forward. But I think to your point, Ronj, it's just so good to hear John and Ricky and Klabes back on the radio doing Cardinal baseball.
All right, so what's been happening on the fields today? Anything of note?
The big notable thing is that Riley O'Brien has been officially ruled out from the World Baseball Classic. He is not going to participate. He'll remain on the reserve list just in case something happens where they need somebody and maybe he can come in late, but he's dealing with the calf injury and that is just slowing him down too much. Also, the starters passed Saturday being announced as it's going to be Kyle Leahy and Michael McGreevy in those next two spots. So that's the news, if you want to call it that, from today in camp.
So, I mean, we've seen some video and you've been taking video from, you know, the field, and you've got Richard Fitz, who came over in the trade this offseason, you know, taking on Thomas Jacy, and Fitz is a pitcher. And how do you think he will factor in this season, if at all, whether it's in the rotation or elsewhere?
Klabes, do you want to take that one before I give my thoughts? Do we have Klabes back with us?
Well, you know, there is. Good question. I think that the key in the spring training right now is getting quality innings, whether on the backfields or in a game. And that's something that I think is one of the most challenging things that you have in spring training, to make sure these guys get enough against legitimate hitters and see what their stuff looks like. So now the back end, I think, is still up for grabs. I think it's really one spot, because you think about Libby, Dustin May, McGreevy, Leahy. And so now you have Palante and Fitz, and there's a few other guys that are competing for some starting positions. But I think there's only one left, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm curious because just reading between the lines on some of the stuff that Ali has said, I think there's a good chance they start the season, excuse me, either with a straight six-man rotation or like a five-and-a-half-man rotation where somebody's maybe starting every other time through as they continue to ramp these guys up. So if that's the case, they've already pushed their major league depth all the way because Hunter Dobbins isn't – he hasn't been cleared yet. We've asked Ali about Dobbins on an everyday basis. They've not given any more information. So I it just feels like it's trending in the direction of not having Dobbins. So then Klaibs is right in saying, you know, the guys that are kind of locked in here, I think you do look at Matthew Liberatore, Dustin May, Michael McGreevy. Those guys definitely have spots. I think Kyle Leahy is likely to have a spot as well, assuming that he doesn't do anything in spring that would make you not want to do that. Andre Pallante is probably on the inside looking in as well. And then that brings Richard Fitz, who where your question all started with. I think Fitz kind of likely starts the season in some sort of hybrid role, starting a little bit, maybe working out of the bullpen a little bit. And then we see what it looks like two or three times through the rotation. Is the work that Andre Pallante did in the offseason, is it real? Is it something that where he's going to be an impactful pitcher again? If he's not, then all of a sudden you have a conversation about Fitz walking into one of those spots. We can say the same thing about Kyle Leahy. But my suspicion would be that they're going to go with six guys in some form to start out the year.
Yeah, and you know, I think you see a lot of teams do that because we don't see guys going nine innings. And I think the key is you want to get to at least five innings your first time out, then try and get to six the next time, and really building off of 50 pitches that most guys can give you any time. So we get through spring training, you hope a guy's built up to give you at least 80, and then we take our chances.
Yesterday, we spoke to Matthew Liberatore, who is getting the start tomorrow in that first Grapefruit League game. And, you know, we talked about his 151 innings that he threw last year and about what he was sort of expecting this year and did not have a hard set number, but, you know, was hoping or thought that he'd get up to about 180. I mean, what would you like to see from him? Is that about right? Is that about what they would need from him if he does end up being the opening day starter?
Yeah, I think that's about right. And I'm not going to get too caught up in the exact number of innings. I think they're just trying to set him up to be the leader of this rotation. You know, they've got him starting Grapefruit League opener. I think he's going to be the opening day starter. They could have chosen anybody to go do that Nest video that they put together here in this offseason, and they chose Matthew Liberatore to do that. So they are setting him up to be the guy. I'm not going to there's a certain like threshold that you don't want to cross in terms of adding innings from one year to the next. But at 150 or so innings, he's perfectly fine to push that another 20, 30 innings. And that puts him in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. You know, and there was a time when a guy could give you 220, 250 innings.
Yeah, that's over.
Tarek Skubal was a Cy Young Award winner, and he pitched less than 200 innings last season. So it really, I think the one thing we're not talking enough about is what does a bullpen look like? Because they are really going to be the decision makers on the outcome of this season, because I don't expect any of the Cardinal pitchers to go beyond six innings, maybe seven, before they turn over to the pen. So you have to have good arms and fresh arms almost on a daily basis, which means you'll see a lot of guys going back and forth from Memphis. And when you have that situation set up, I think you have to have at least 18 to maybe 25, 26 pitchers in your organization that can help the major league team.
Cardinals last year had, what, something like the seventh fewest innings thrown out of the bullpen. It was seventh or eighth fewest innings that were thrown from the bullpen. So they didn't, and if you look collectively over the course of the year, they didn't work as much as some of the other teams did, like the Dodgers went to their pen a ton and the Mets and Brewers did the same thing. Are we looking at about the same sort of workload where the starters are kind of about average in terms of innings thrown and the bullpen working a little bit less? Or do you think it'll be flipped a bit?
No, I think it's going to work more. You look at last year, you had Sonny Gray, who was going to get you to the seventh inning. You had Miles Michaelis, who was going to get you to the seventh inning. And they're gone. So now the one guy you're counting on, obviously, is Liberatore to give you more. I don't know what Dustin May has, because he's coming off a little bit of a challenging past season in Boston. I don't know what Pallante is anymore. And so with McGreevy getting a chance to start on a regular basis, I like what I saw last year, Matt, with regard to his durability. He gave the Cardinals some pleasant surprises, giving you seven, I think even one eight-inning performance. So I'm of the belief that he might be the key factor here as far as length. But then again, he basically gave you a half a season.
Yeah, the Cardinals have telegraphed that they don't expect starters to go as deep this year because the acquisitions that they've made out of the bullpen, outside of the high leverage guys, one of the big things they've talked about is multi-inning guys. When they took Matt Pushard out of the Rule 5 draft, the first thing we heard was, this is someone who can cover multiples. I think a lot of times we don't talk about Matt Svaundsen as a ninth-inning closer because one of his great values is he can give you multiples. What I was talking about earlier with Richard Fitz maybe starting the season in a hybrid role, well, that puts another guy in the bullpen who can give you multiples. So for all the reasons that Klaibs just mentioned, and he was correct, I don't expect starting pitching to go to throw as many innings this season as even last year. And I think there's going to be a little bit more pressure on the bullpen. And that's where having relief pitchers who can give you more than three outs becomes a really, really important thing. Because if you start running into situations where you're going through a run of starting pitchers giving you five innings every single day, and your bullpen is covering four innings every day, and you need four dudes to cover four innings, you're going to be in trouble really, really quickly.
And really, when you look at this team and we look at Kyle Leahy, that's how he really got a chance to start, because he gave them multiples and they started to expand that role a little bit more. He was still effective. And somebody said, hey, maybe we ought to turn this guy into a starter. And that's what he come in the spring training.
Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly with us. They are live in Florida where the Cardinals have spring training. There's going to be, as we mentioned, Grapefruit League play starting tomorrow. They will take on the Nationals. That game is going to be right here on 104.1 FM KMOX. We hope you stick around for the rest of the Gas House Gang, which is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, and by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. And by the way, if you've been paying attention to Olympic hockey, the women's team won gold yesterday. And today, the Canadian team has just advanced to the gold medal game. They are waiting to see if the United States is going to advance. The U.S. is going to play here in about 2 hours. They get started at 2:10. So we'll see how the U.S. men do and if they'll make it to the gold medal game. But if you'd like to know why betting on the winter games on FanDuel makes sense, well, it's because you can bet on that. You can bet on the game lines. You can bet on medal counts. You know, whatever country you think is going to get the most medals by the end of the Olympics, or maybe even the most gold medals, you can make that bet right on the FanDuel app, an app that is easy to use. It is super secure and it is a lot of fun. It's intuitive, and just all you need to do is get started and go to the website FanDuel.com/Missouri and start to get a little familiar with it, and you'll get the hang of it in no time. With the winter games on right now, there is no better way to follow along than with a bet on FanDuel. Also, maybe you're not into hockey. Maybe it's curling. You know, it could be something else. It could be speed skating. A lot of events that you can get into and place your bet on FanDuel. FanDuel.com/Missouri. FanDuel is the official sportsbook partner of KMOX. FanDuel, play your game. Must be 21 or over and present in Missouri. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. It is the Gas House Gang from noon until 1 o'clock every weekday on KMOX. And we are pretty baseball heavy today. We'll get into some other stuff later on in the show, but we've got Mike Claiborne and Matt Pauly joining us from Jupiter, Florida, as the Cardinals are getting ready for Grapefruit League play tomorrow. And just want to remind you, the game, you can hear Cardinals baseball on the radio tomorrow. So we are very much looking forward to that, an afternoon game on 104.1 FM KMOX. Matt, we talked a lot about the pitching staff to start the show, but it's the lineup that people are also interested in, because they've lost a couple of pretty big contributors from the past season, with the Brendan Donovan trade, you know, him being gone. Some of the same guys are around. We don't know about Lars Nootbaar, if he's going to be ready to start the year. What about lineup construction this year? I know Ollie talked about it a little bit today.
Yeah, actually, Ollie talked about it a lot today, and a lot of the focus was on leadoff. So there's four guys at this point that could really be considered for the leadoff spot. Lars Nootbaar, Mason Winn, Victor Scott II, and J.J. Weatherholt's name was mentioned as well. Now, who's leading off a handful of games in spring training play? It's really hard to evaluate that. You know, lineup construction in Grapefruit League play is a lot different than lineup construction once the regular season gets started. But you just get the sense that lineup construction is going to be a lot more fluid this year, and guys are going to be moving around. You no longer have a Nolan Arenado who's just going to be locked into the same spot in the lineup every single day. You don't have a Paul Goldschmidt. You don't have these guys in that spot. So this is something where if you are a fan of a team sticking with the same lineup on an everyday basis, you may not be happy this year, because I think we're going to see a lot of different lineup configurations.
How do you feel about J.J. Weatherholt possibly? And I know we're not even through the spring training yet, but having a rookie jump right in his first reps, and this is a hypothetical. Let's say they do say, okay, you're the leadoff guy to start the year. Nootbaar is not going to be available, so we're gonna have you do it, and then see how it goes until Nootbaar is available again. I always feel, and every guy is different, but I always feel a little cautious about throwing a rookie into that spot. You know, making them be the leadoff guy, making them set the table right away. Not that they can't handle it, and some guys could handle that right away, but are you comfortable with that possibility that he could be that for them?
Yeah, I don't have too much of a problem with it. And generally, I think I would agree with what you're saying, but Weatherholt's a really mentally strong guy, and he's
very confident. Yeah.
Yes. Well, beyond. So he's somebody I want to see it play out a little bit in spring and just see what he looks like as a hitter in these games before I jump to this. You know, he should be the leadoff hitter. But if what he does in spring leads Oliver Marmol to think that him in the leadoff spot makes the most sense, I'm not going to be overly concerned about it based off the rookie stuff or the emotional stuff or anything like that. If it's a good baseball decision, then it's fine. Look, Victor Scott II up there makes a lot of sense, because even if the on base isn't where you want it to be, anytime he does get on base, he's very, very active on the bases. We know Lars Nootbaar. I've never loved Mason Winn as a leadoff hitter. I like him a little bit down in the order. I think he's somebody who can drive in some runs. But those first three guys, I don't have a problem with any of them in that leadoff spot.
Yeah, I generally don't like putting speed guys at the top of the order just because they're fast. I want to see somebody with some on base. The difference is, for this season, I don't know that it's because this is still going to be a find out kind of year, where there are a lot of guys you're still just trying to give reps to, try to find out what they can do, because you have to make decisions about personnel moving forward. For the most part, I don't really like putting low OBP guys up top, but I don't know if it matters so much in 2026, just if you're giving an opportunity to somebody, yeah, to see what they can do.
I don't think it does too much this year, but I also think we're going to see Scott likely take a bit of a step forward offensively. They are really, really happy with the work that he did. Ollie has said over and over and over about the level of confidence that Victor is going to be a guy who takes a step forward offensively. He doesn't have to be a fantastic on-base guy. If he's just above average on base, you combine that with the speed, and then all of a sudden, that's a dangerous leadoff hitter.
I mean, you get him like 330, 340, I'll feel really good about that. He was just barely over 300 with OBP last year. That's not good at all. I mean, it's not ideal, but I think we all have to take a 30,000 foot view of the entire roster this year. And especially at the start of the year, I have no issue with them at all. Just, and I don't mean it in the purest sense, but just throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what sticks. I'm okay with that, especially in April.
Yeah. And honestly, I know we're I kind of brought up the leadoff hitter thing, but I think the bigger, they got a bunch of dudes who are candidates to be your leadoff hitter. Who's going to be your three hitter? Who's going to be your four hitter?
Like Ivan Herrera? Between him and Burleson, right?
See, I kind of like Burleson in the two spot. He might have to go down to the three spot, but yeah. I think, yeah. So maybe you do something where it's like Newt Barr. I don't know. Like
Newt Barr, Herrera. Okay. No. I'm thinking maybe Newt Barr, Burleson, Herrera.
Maybe.
Unless you want to go left to start the lineup. I don't know if that's going to matter all that much.
These are fun conversations. They're a little bit early, but the bigger thing is they don't have a lot of thump in the lineup right now.
No, they do not. Power is a thing. That's why they're not going to be one of the reasons. They're probably not going to be especially good this year is because they don't have power. They had some of the least last year, and it's not the only way to win ball games. But as you know, if you're not going to pitch lights out from top to bottom, you better have some power. And if you don't have a good amount of it, you're going to have a really tough time winning ball games. Matt Pauly is with us. We're having some trouble with connection issues. Mike Claiborne is on the show, though, with us, both guys from Jupiter, Florida, getting ready for baseball. The season is going to start. Billikens play tonight. We've got City SC starting their season tomorrow. This is a good sports weekend here in St. Louis. And this is the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, and by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji, Claibs, and Pauly are in Florida right now where the Cardinals are continuing spring training. And in fact, they do have a Grapefruit League game tomorrow, which will be here on KMOX. And guys, I wanted to talk about the union thing for just a little bit because Derek Gould had written about Michael McGreevy, who's the union rep for the Cardinals. And, you know, wanted to talk a little bit about parity in sports or parity in this sport. And I'm glad we have Claibs for this conversation. So let me start with you, Mike, because there was a comment made by Chris Bassett, who is one of the union reps. And yesterday or 2 days ago, rather, he was talking about how there is more parity in baseball and that baseball has figured it out better than just about any other sport, any of the other major professional sports. And he is right that there have been multiple different World Series winners in the last 15 years. The Dodgers repeated, but for the most part, you got a bunch of different winners. However, the difference is almost all of those teams, with the exception of Kansas City 11 years ago and the Cardinals a couple of years prior to that, almost all of the teams are big market teams. So what do you make of those comments and the parity in baseball? Do you think it exists the way he says it does?
No, I don't think it does. I think he's off base on that. I don't think there's parity when it comes to the Pittsburgh Pirates being in contention. The Athletics are not in contention. They're in the league. And I don't think you can base a parity on who the champion is because there's only going to be one champion. But the same participants in postseason are the same every year. Where's the parity? I mean, so I think he's wrong on that. You know, they don't want to deal with the salary cap. Those are the taboo words. And I think what they need to really try and find is, first of all, from an owner's side, they have to get a TV deal, a legitimate TV deal, because the reason why the cap works in the other sports is because they all have sound, legitimate TV deals, and they do revenue sharing. Baseball doesn't do that. You have some owners that spend $80 million. You have other owners that spend $320 million. So, you know, I don't think there's any parity. I don't think the parity he's talking about, because as I mentioned, it's one team that wins a championship. But I would have asked Chris Bassett, how many teams are always in postseason or in contention? And it's the same ones. You know, now Milwaukee has come on the scene here recently, but, you know, when you look at the Dodgers and Philadelphia and the Yankees, you know, it's all the same players every year. So I think that that's what the owners need to do. Now, the players have to come to a realistic idea of saying, we need to find a partnership instead of being contentious. This is the only league where the owners and players openly show disdain for each other. And that's got to stop, because they should be working together as partners. I mean, you look at the other sports, the revenue sharing they have between players and owners seems to work from a standpoint where they're somewhere around 50-50 partners. And at last check, the salaries in all those other leagues continues to go up. The base salary continues to go up. So there's room for it. And I hear the story, well, it limits what we can make. Well, you're not making it enough anyway. There's only a handful of guys in the game that are making $35, $40, $50 million a year. Everybody else, their numbers are going in the other direction.
Yeah, the middle class of baseball players have kind of been knocked out here. You either make lots and lots of money or you're pretty close to league minimum. Now, the one thing that concerns me, and I think this is where Klaibs and I differentiate a little bit on our beliefs, is I look at those other sports that have salary caps, and I also look at leagues where basically all the teams are spending to the salary cap. Nobody thinks the Pittsburgh Pirates are going to spend to the salary cap if baseball puts one in. Nobody thinks the A's are going to. Nobody thinks the Rays are going to. And even if you put a salary floor in, some of the numbers that I've seen bantied about have been about an $80 million difference between the salary cap and the salary floor. That doesn't fix a thing. When you've got some teams that are spending $80 million more than other teams, it's a lesser version of what we have right now, but it's the exact same thing what's going on right now. So that's where revenue sharing does come in. So I don't think the problem is cap. I think the problem is if you do put a cap in, which I don't think is ever going to happen, but if there was a cap, you would have to do a cap system that allowed every single team to basically spend to the cap, and then baseball would start looking like the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, so on and so forth.
Yeah, Klaibs, you mentioned the revenue sharing part of it, that football has that part figured out, and that's one of the big reasons there is so much parity in that sport. And I know Bassett, one of the things he said was, well, if we look back 25 years from now and we talk about the you know, the Dodgers winning 7 World Series and being in 10 of them, we would just say, well, that's a dynasty, because that's the New England Patriots. That's what they did. But I don't think that's really the same thing as what's happening in baseball.
I agree.
Because again, the revenue sharing is a very, very big deal here.
Yeah. You know, again, I would disagree with Chris Bassett on that front. Dynasties in sports don't come along that often because, A, you don't have the same team. Players, you know, free agency has created that. You know, players move on. The skill level isn't the same. And, you know, a lot of things happen in the offseason. You know, there are trades. You have draft choices that maybe step up and you save money there. So, yeah, we can look, you know, 25 years from now, the game is going to change a couple of times with regard to collective bargaining as far as agreements are concerned. So I don't think we can see the Dodgers or anybody having a 10-year run like Chris says, and maybe he was exaggerating just a bit. But when I look at this whole thing, I think that there's a couple of things they have to do. They have to find middle ground. And if you're going to do a 5-year deal like they've done in the past, why don't we at year 3 tweak it? If we see there's some flaws within the current structure, Let's have an ability to tweak it where both sides can go in and say, well, you know what, this isn't working for us. And the owners say, well, this is something we'd like to be better at. And find some things that you know are going to be reopeners. And that way you don't have this foolishness every 5 years of everybody wanting to die on the same hill for the wrong reasons.
I love the idea, Klaibs. I don't know if it's going to happen. There's so much disdain between the players and the owners.
No, you're
and
right.
It's not going away. And I don't know I don't know what can happen for it to go away because
will it ever? Because it's I think Klaibs mentioned it, that there's just more animosity between the sides in this sport than any of the others.
You would have to bring in a really special person, probably on the player side more than the owner side, because you're able to place it. You have to bring in a really special person who can be a bulldog and can fight for what the players believe, all at the same time having a great relationship and having respect with the owners. And that's not going to be an easy person to find.
Well, you know, on the other side of that coin, from the owner's standpoint, Rob Manfred said he's done after 29.
Yeah.
Maybe that's when this whole thing can be redone, where both sides can come in with fresh faces. We've seen it in the NBA. And when David Stern, who ran a pretty good league, he might have been one of the greatest commissioners in the history of sport. But Adam Silver came in with a different approach, a little bit more objective, a lot more transparent. And the players have gone through a couple of different executive directors, have found a way to coexist. And, you know, they have a better working relationship, you know. And with the NFL, Roger Goodell, well, I don't have much good to say about him. But he replaced
Paul Bagley, well compensated.
Who was a guy that was very, very transparent with the players, and they got things done. With Goodell, you know, I'm not going to say, I don't have anything else to say about him. And then there's Gary Bettman, who's the longest tenured commissioner in all of team sports. I knew Gary when he was the deputy commissioner in the NBA. I don't think anyone thought he would last this long enough to break the union twice. And, you know, they're in pretty good shape these days because of him and his determination. But having said that, he has found a way to whoever the NHL Players Association would run at him as far as negotiating. He found a way to keep this thing afloat to the point where the National Hockey League players are making pretty good money, considering they don't have the great wealth of TV contracts like we see in the NBA and the NFL.
Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly are joining us from Florida. I mentioned that Michael McGreevy is the Cardinals union rep, and I did not know this.
How do you make a player rep, and he has less than a year's experience in the league?
Well, I don't know. Well, Derek was writing about how his dad's a judge, his mother's an attorney, and maybe that's why. Maybe he knows a little something about negotiating.
Maybe they ought to be the player rep then.
Okay.
He joked that he wanted to bring something to the dinner table when they're all having their conversations. But I mean, it is kind of funny. A guy who's been here for 15 minutes is the player rep, and they had to get that figured out very quickly because the Cardinals have a pretty long history of having strong members serving, you know, prominent roles in the union. And like, this is nothing against Michael McGreevy, but he's obviously not one of the more prominent union heads at this point.
Well, he's going to learn quickly.
He is.
And what a year to join. What a year to be the guy.
It's really a head scratcher. And, you know, but here's the other thing. The Cardinals only have three guys with 5 years or more of big league experience. So the well wasn't that deep. And two of the three guys, this is their first year with the Cardinals. So you really didn't have a lot of legitimate options when it came to trying to find a replacement. Palante was the assistant last year. I guess he didn't want any part of it for this year. But it is an important position to a point, because the executive committee, I believe, is eight guys.
Yeah,
they really make the decisions. You know, what they do is tell the player rep for each team, this is what we're going to do. And it's not like the players really have that much of a say, because they put it in the hands of eight other guys along with the executive director and president of the association.
But Klaibs, they got overruled in that last CBA because the eight-member subcommittee voted against the CBA overwhelmingly. And then it went to the rank and file where the 30 voters across the league voted for it. So that was one of the really rare times where we've seen the subcommittee go in one direction and get completely and totally overruled by the rank and file Major League Baseball players.
Yeah, and you know, you make a good point, Matt, and the rank and file, the ones who really pushed back was some of the aging veterans who saw this and saw themselves being aced out of this thing quicker. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys who were doing that are either on their way out or out of the game completely. They have their own internal mess, in my opinion. And I don't know how they fix it, especially going into a contract year. But they might want to step back and revamp how they do this and make sure that they're more representative of the main body of players instead of, you know, the high-end guys who seem like they could care less if they get locked out because they're going to get paid or they've already been paid.
Well, you guys hit it, the middle class being priced out, basically. You've got a class of players that makes a crap ton of money and then a bunch of guys who don't make that much. Again, relatively speaking, we understand that professional baseball players are well compensated compared to the rest of us. But when you talk about how the pay structure is, you know, you've got the Ohtanis and then you have a bunch of players who are making close to the minimum. So that middle class is really, and this is a last several years thing that has happened, where you got a bunch of those free agents who are still sitting out there who won't get signed because teams would rather pay somebody the minimum instead of go with them.
Well, and here's the other thing, Chris, when you look at it like that, there's so many guys who are making closer to the minimum. I think the minimum is now $780. But, you know, the problem is it takes so long to get to make the real money out there. I mean, you look at the other sports, a guy can be whole by the time he's 23 years old. You know, especially look at the NBA, the NFL. You know, think about it. If you come out of college and get drafted, so let's say you're 22 and you go through your 6 years, you're 28, maybe 29 years old before you become a free agent. And then at that point, they say, well, I don't know if we want to spend that kind of money for a guy who's going to be 30 years old here pretty soon. And I'll give you a good example. Brendan Donovan. Brendan Donovan isn't even a free agent yet, and he's going to be 29 this year.
Yep.
Because he got to the show later. And there's more guys like that compared to the other sports where guys walk into the league already in pretty good shape. You know, a rookie contract in the NBA, you know, I believe it's 3 years or 4 years, you're already making well over $1 million a year.
That's right. And I think you're absolutely right. And I do have for a long time, even though it's better now than it used to be, I think players are under team control for way too long before they can cash in. And by the time they can, other teams think they're too old. Cardinals, by the way, have two guys who are 30 or older, at least on the projected roster, and they're both in the bullpen, Stanek and O'Brien. And Ryan Stanek at 34, almost 35, he's your oldest guy on the team. And O'Brien,
look how long it's taken for Riley O'Brien to even have a role that we're not even sure he's going to keep.
Yeah, and he's 31. Klabes and Paulie are in Florida. This is the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Just a couple of minutes left on the show today. Big sports weekend here. As I mentioned, the Cardinals will start spring training play. The Grapefruit League for them begins tomorrow. We've got our first spring training game of the year going on right now. In Sarasota, the Orioles are playing the Yankees, so baseball actual play has started, so that's very, very cool. Cardinals will get it going tomorrow. City SC starts their season tomorrow here in St. Louis, so soccer is about underway. And tonight, the Billikens, they got a big game against VCU at home, guys, and after taking the loss at Rhode Island, really, really need a win here, Klabes.
This is the biggest game of the year. I mean, first of all, you beat VCU in their own building for the first time in history, and they've been playing really well. Billikens have kind of slowed down a little bit, cooled off a little bit. Listening to Josh Schertz the other night after the loss, they know they had to push a reset button. And knowing that it's VCU, and you're basically playing for first place in this situation. So they're going to have a big crowd tonight. I remember having Chris May on Sunday. And he even said it then. He said, this will be the biggest game we have on the remaining schedule. So hopefully everybody can get out and check it out. Of course, I would be listening to it on KMOX tonight. So
that's right.
I'm looking forward to listening to Earl and Rammer with the call.
Broadcast at 5:45.
If people have not been paying attention, SLU 12-1 in league play, VCU 12-2 in league play, a half game back. So first place is on the line. And if you're SLU, I still think everything is on the table for what you want to accomplish this year. But being the one seed going into the conference tournament is a big part of that.
Yeah, it is. They definitely want to do that. I think you could probably afford one more loss in terms of just getting a tournament bid. Because I look back at the Indiana State team everybody thought got snubbed, and I agree with that, a couple of years ago when Schertz was the coach, and it was a 6-loss team. They were 28-6. I think the Billikens can probably afford one more here. I don't think it could be tonight. I don't think you want to lose this one tonight, because you're going to have to go deal with Dayton on the road after this one.
Yeah, and you know, because of the schedule, you just don't know what the selection committee thinks about teams like St. Louis U.
That's exactly right. Guys, enjoy Florida. I know it's about 80 degrees down there, so keep it up. And
82.
And 82, there you go. And enjoy the broadcast tomorrow. We are looking forward to listening in. We're really excited about baseball being on the radio here. So we'll be tuned in. It'll be the Cardinals and Nationals on KMOX tomorrow afternoon. Guys, take care. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly in Jupiter, Florida, where the Cardinals have spring training going on. I'm Chris Ranji. The Gas House Gang will return on Monday at 12 o'clock on 104.1 FM KMOX.